What's going on, everybody? Justin Morgenstein back with you on another edition of Phillies Today. Hope everyone had a great All-Star break, but if you're anything like me, and if you've listened to this podcast, and if you're a baseball fan in general, I'm sure you share the same sentiment. I need baseball back. Like, this week, it's nice to get a little break from the Phillies and, you know, actually do some stuff with my nights, and that is other than sitting on my couch at 6:45 and turning on the game, but I need them back. Like, it was a nice little break, but at the same time, I just miss watching them every single night. And we finally get the chance to get them back in Philadelphia this weekend, which will be great to see. And obviously, we'll talk about Kyle Schwarber and what he was able to do in the All-Star game. And it was pretty incredible watching him in the swing off take home the MVP. We'll dive into that a little bit more here. We'll get into some second half stuff that I'm looking at for sure as we are now post All-Star break and heading into the stretch run here in August and September. And I'll get into some deadline things as usual. We're now, 2 weeks away from the trade deadline, which is pretty crazy. It feels like we've been talking about it for a while, but things starting to heat up and some rumors starting to get real, some things starting to, you know, fall off the table as well. So we will get into all those things. It's one little standings check-in before we get into the second half as well. And as always, we will have our weekend preview as the Angels come to town for three. So, yeah, a lot to get to here. But as I said, want to talk about Kyle Schwarber's performance in the All-Star game because it was really cool. Everything from the swing off to the ABS system, which I thought was great. And I'll get to the Schwarber stuff first because I do want to get into the ABS a little bit. But the swing off, first of all, it's a great idea. And there's no reason for guys to play extra innings and have to use extra pitchers. And it's just a situation where it's the All-Star game. It doesn't decide home advantage in the World Series anymore. Ultimately, it's a game that does not matter. And for the fans who stayed up late enough, and believe me, it was like 11:30, almost midnight before it was over, it was a really cool thing to see. And it was a treat, I think, for all baseball fans who wanted to see something a little different. And that's what it was. So, first of all, I thought it was interesting just how they went about the lineups and what three guys they were going to put out there, because it was obvious that some of the stars that had started the game had left and, you know, went home. And, you know, people were saying that Shohei and Judge were on planes already back to their respective cities. So those two guys weren't in it, and it would have been clearly cool to see the, you know, the premier guys, the premier home run hitters on both teams face off in the Derby. That probably would have been, you know, Judge and Cal Raleigh and, you know, Jose Ramirez, guys who are really, really talented home run hitters that would clearly be in the top of the pecking order in terms of being in the swing off. But one of those guys for the National League, regardless, would have been Kyle Schwarber. And the fact that Schwarber did what he did and hit those three home runs, and it was just a great buildup of drama and them being down two and then him hitting the three in a row and going up one, and Jonathan Aranda being the guy for the American League, which, again, there were still so many better options there, I thought, you know. But Aaron Boone elects to go to him, and ultimately he doesn't end up hitting a homer. Kyle Schwarber wins the MVP of the game, and what's funny about it is Pete Alonso is probably on his way to winning MVP if Aranda had just hit one out of the ballpark, because he had hit the home run earlier in the game, and, you know, granted, the National League had blown a 6-0 lead, which was pretty wild in itself, but Alonso had already homered in the game, and he was probably going to be the person to clinch the swing off if Aranda just hit one, where Alonso's going last. We know his history with the home run derby and how much he's obsessed with it for whatever reason. He is still such a dork in my mind. But anyway, so it was cool to see Kyle Schwarber be able to clinch it himself and be able to do it and take home the MVP award for in the game itself. I think he went, 0-for-2 with a walk, and for him to be able to step up in that way and then be able to take home the award was really cool. And want to talk about the ABS system too, which I mentioned. I thought it was awesome to see. I think it worked out really well. There was one big count in the eighth inning where there was a ball that was called and it got overturned to a strike, and it was just really quick. I thought it was exactly what you wanted to see. As long as they can limit the number of challenges to the right number to where we're not having challenges every other pitch, I think it's going to work out really, really well in baseball, and something that I think pitchers and hitters alike are really going to end up appreciating, because you end up not getting screwed on some of these calls, and you don't have nights to where Phil Cuzzy a couple of weeks back ends up costing the Phillies a game potentially. So I think it was really good to see, and I think it worked really well. It's very quick. It's almost like tennis to where it's instant gratification, and they tap the head, and then you look up at the screen, and it's right there really quickly. So don't think it delays the game at all, and I ultimately think it's going to be something that when it's here, probably next year, it's going to be something that changes the game for the better. And you still have the human element of it. You still have guys behind the plate calling balls and strikes, but to have it perfected and sort of polished in a way to where you can use the ABS system to everyone's advantage, I think is something that will only benefit baseball. And it's going to be something like the pitch clock or some of the other new rules, the bigger bags and stuff like that, that came to baseball and people were worried about it first. But then after a couple months, you really end up forgetting about them in totality. So thought the ABS system was great. Last thing I wanted to get to in the All-Star game wise that I thought, was kind of interesting that I would like to see, I wanted to talk about a little on here was the Jacob Mizorowski thing and the Phillies quotes that they had once Mizorowski was elected an All-Star. Obviously, they were very outspoken. Nick Castellanos, Trey Turner were. Castellanos called it, it's like the Savannah Bananas now, which was a pretty funny quote in itself. But I thought it put Mizorowski in a tough spot. And he's a really talented guy and is somebody who I don't know if necessarily people are viewing the game just to watch Jacob Mizorowski, despite him being clearly a very highly touted, highly thought of prospect. And he throws 101, which speaks for itself. But he got the three outs. I thought he looked good in the game. He threw, the gas that everyone was expecting him to throw. But I don't think that putting him in the All-Star game over Christopher Sanchez put any more eyes on it than it would have been the other way around. Like, I don't think Jacob Mizorowski was like 1-1 Paul Skeens pitching in the All-Star game last year. And it's not that type of hype when it comes to him. But I get where Major League Baseball is coming from with them putting their young stars in the game and wanting to, get eyes on them and get people talking about Jacob Mizorowski. But for Christopher Sanchez to not have pitched in that game and to just not have been there as a participant when he's got the numbers that he has and is probably a top 3 to 4 Cy Young candidate in the National League right now, I think is still just a little ridiculous. And I get what Major League Baseball is trying to do, but you can't turn it into a sort of gimmicky event to where we're just letting guys in just for the entertainment value rather than players who deserved to be in that game. And Christopher Sanchez, even more, I believe, than Ranger Suarez, just because he's been doing it the whole year, deserve to be in that game. And you can, say Ranger, and you can even go Kodai Senga. Like, there were guys out there whose numbers dictated them being All-Stars this year, but then they weren't in the game. So overall, thought it was a fun night, though, and the Schwarber thing was awesome and was really, enjoyed watching the All-Star game. And I thought the Home Run Derby was enjoyable, too, even though it feels like the rules do change every other year, and it takes me a whole round to sort of figure out what the rules are. But Cal Raleigh, man, he is having some sort of season, so that was fun to watch there as well. But want to bring this back to the Phils and sort of talk about the second half here and just some things I'm looking out for. If I'm talking headlines and things that starting on Friday night, I'm really going to be tuning in for and interested and intrigued to find out. This is what I'm going for here. So just mentioned the Cy Young. The Zach Wheeler Cy Young campaign needs to, if it isn't already underway, it needs to be underway heavy because we got to get this guy a Cy Young award. Him and Skeens have very, comparable seasons so far. Skeens edging him a little bit in ERA, but Wheeler, I think, edging him a little bit in innings pitched, and their numbers sort of can go back and forth. And it's going to be a really interesting race down the stretch here and to see what ends up happening, especially after Wheeler's lost out on two of these races before with Corbin Burnes in 2021 and with Chris Sale last year. Like, I think Zach Wheeler, while clearly you want a championship to be the thing that's on his mind, I think there's a reason why he didn't go to the All-Star game, and he is gearing up for what he hopes could be a Cy Young clinching second half of the season. And I think with the restrictions that the Pirates seem to put on Paul Skeens sometimes, he typically only goes 5-6 innings, and Wheeler's sort of the opposite here, and he's been going longer and longer, has some 7-inning, 8-inning outings recently. I think that's ultimately going to be the thing that hopefully gets him over the hump this time, and that's been what's, I guess, been his calling card those 2 years when he didn't win it as well, is that he has the innings advantage over those guys. And I think a lot of people are starting to recognize what an impressive feat it is that Zach Wheeler's accomplished over the past few years and since his time he's become a Philly, is that he continues to age and he continues to throw more and more innings, but he's still one of the most durable guys in the game. I mean, we've talked about that with Nola, but the durability mixed with the level that he's pitching at is something that is very rare and that we should really be appreciating in this town. And for somebody who could be a borderline Hall of Famer one day, him getting this Cy Young Award would, I think, really put a bow on his Phillies and his Major League Baseball career, because he is one of the most talented guys in the sport. And for what he's done in this five-year-ish run is pretty spectacular. So we're definitely on Wheeler Cy Young watch. And hey, I mentioned it a couple of minutes ago, Chris Sanchez isn't that far behind. I mean, some of these numbers that Christopher Sanchez has in terms of ERA, whip, strikeouts, like, he is towards the top of the National League in all those categories. And for him to have the season that he's having and just to do it as quietly as he's been doing it, I wouldn't rule him out for that either. So he's probably, what, third or fourth in odds right now? So look out for Christopher Sanchez the year goes along, too. And maybe it'll be a fun little storyline with those two guys pushing each other there as well. And I know there's some other really talented guys in the National League this year, with Logan Webb having a phenomenal season. He's definitely in that mix. Yamamoto out in L.A. is having a phenomenal year as well. And but we'll see. There's a lot of talented pitchers out there, but it really does feel like it's Zach Wheeler's time to win one there. And mention Kyle Schwarber. I think 50 home runs is certainly in the question. He's the fastest to get to 30 since Mike Schmidt did it in 1979. And I think that I couldn't tell you a better season that he could possibly be having heading in to a free agent year. And I guess I might as well talk about it now. And, it sort of got mentioned during the All-Star break, and there were a couple of quotes that came out from Kyle Schwarber himself sort of addressing his free agency in the media scrums that they had over there in Atlanta. And, he says that he loves being in Philadelphia, that the, atmosphere here is second to none. And I do think that him and the Phillies are a perfect fit for each other in terms of the protection he has in the lineup and also clearly the power that they need with Kyle Schwarber, because I don't really know if he leaves where that power comes from. I think we're still up in the air with Bryce. We have to see what his second half of the year is going to be like. That's definitely going to be something we have to watch out for as well. But I would really still be surprised if they don't end up having a reunion and Kyle Schwarber's back in Philadelphia next year. But, there was an interesting quote about him, and I'm sure this was from a Cincinnati reporter, about him maybe going back and playing for his hometown Reds, who, he's from the Western Ohio area, grew up a Reds fan, and said that's part of the reason why he fell in love with baseball as a kid, watching the Reds growing up. And it's something that, if he ended up playing for the Reds, he says it would be pretty cool to see. And for somebody who, we felt is pretty sure is coming back to Philadelphia next year, I mean, that's jarring. It's jarring to hear that. And for him to say he would love to play for the Reds, I'm sure is part of his, leverage. And clearly there are going to be plenty of teams out there looking for Kyle Schwarber's services. I think the Red Sox are another team that a lot of people think, hey, he's played there before, would fit the lineup really well, sort of fits their timeline too, because they're, up and coming. They've won 10 straight going to the All-Star break and are one of the, breakout teams in baseball this year. So it's interesting. And I think that, again, if I had to bet money on it right now, I think Kyle Schwarber stays a Philly. But there are definitely rumors out there, and it is going to be something that if he ends up getting 50 home runs, he's going to end up making $30 to $40 million a year, whether people think that's too much or not. Because that sort of production, I don't care how old you are, and I know free agency sort of leans towards age and future more than what you've done in the past, but 50 homers is 50 homers. And he works an incredible at-bat, clearly a leader in the locker room as well. So it's not going to be easy to bring the guy back, and I think John Middleton, Dave Dombrowski, and the rest of the Phillies front office understand that as well. So I think the other thing that we got to be watching out for is Andrew Painter watch, and I guess off of that is Aaron Nola watch. Like, Andrew Painter in his AAA, I guess, first few months this season hasn't looked great. He's got an ERA over 5. It feels like he's has a little bit of a homer problem, and the fastball really hasn't come back since the Tommy John surgery, and I think it's okay if this is happening. I'm not panicking over Andrew Painter right now, because you've seen a lot of starters who come off Tommy John surgery go through this type of thing. We saw it with Sandy Alcantara early in the year. I mean, he had the worst ERA in baseball as he came off of Tommy John surgery, and he won the Cy Young Award a couple of years ago. And you've seen it with a lot of different guys to where they have the surgery and it takes a little bit for their fastball and for all their stuff to be able to come back and the RPMs to, you know, be as high as they once were. And I think that his secondary stuff is good enough to where he can live off of it for now in AAA, but I do worry about once he's in the big leagues, if his fastball doesn't play and it's straight and it's not at the velocity that it once was, there you run into a problem. So I don't think that it's necessarily a guarantee that we see Andrew Painter up here this year, and I think that's okay. It's something that you can't rush the kid up just because you're in a playoff push and you think you need the extra arm. They have the best rotation in baseball. If they were that desperate to bring him up, I think that would be a different story. But when you have the pitching that you have and you have such a prospect that is so heralded and has been so good for you in your system up until the surgery, I think you really have to be careful. And if he's not ready to come up this year, you don't rush it. It's not something that I think you need to really say, hey, we got to push this guy, even, you know, put him in the bullpen, do something. I don't think that's necessary. And off of that, I think Aaron Nola's health and where he's at the rest of the year is a major contributor to that discussion. And we got probably the biggest positive Aaron Nola update that we've had so far before the All-Star break started, which is good to see. And it was reported that he was doing flat ground work, throwing the baseball at Citizens Bank Park. And look, if you can get any semblance of, you know, what Aaron Nola has been the last few years to add to this rotation and be the number five starter, I mean, that is pretty much all you can ask. And you're going to be able to move guys into the bullpen once the playoffs begin. And I think from a depth perspective, there's really nothing more you can ask. So hopefully that's the case, and we will see with Aaron Nola. And hopefully, you know, Andrew Painter continues to progress down in the minor leagues as well. And last thing I want to bring up before I get into some more deadline stuff here is I'm interested to see Justin Crawford, what ends up happening with him. I feel like it's been due for him to come up for a little while now. He's been obviously having a good year down in AAA. He's batting like 330 to 340 pretty much the entire season. And the ground ball rate is what it is, but he's a very fast guy, and he beats a lot of those ground balls out. But I wonder if they're almost protecting him from himself with him coming up here and potentially not having a great start, and if his trade value would go down because of that. Because right now, I'm in a spot where I would be okay with getting off of Justin Crawford if it meant bringing in a real, you know, improvement, whether it's in the bullpen or in the lineup. I like Justin Crawford. I think he can be a good player. Clearly, he's very good defensively and has all the athletic tools you could possibly ask. But I just think they're in a spot right now to where I think they want an established outfield bat to come in here via trade and help this team get to the next level. I don't think they want to put that pressure on Justin Crawford to be able to come up here and produce like they're really hoping that he can. And it's nothing against him personally, but I just don't know if his skill set is going to be one that conveys into helping this team right away and being somebody who can be the starting center fielder on a World Series team. So wouldn't be shocked if they were, you know, heavily talking about Justin Crawford in some of these trade discussions. So that is something we will monitor for sure. And that leads right into my trade deadline stuff. So it makes me laugh because everyone expects Dave Dombrowski, like nationally, to be aggressive at the deadline, which, again, just always is funny to me because he has not been that guy since he's been here in Philadelphia. And until he does make that big trade deadline move, I can't expect him to be, you know, old Dave Dombrowski, like with the Tigers and the Red Sox, of mortgaging the farm system and going all in and getting, you know, that big bat or that big bullpen arm or that starter that sort of puts a team over the top. So we'll see, but I'm not expecting anything crazy despite what a lot of these reports are saying here. But one interesting report that did come out of the All-Star game, and I guess one interesting quote it was Byron Buxton was asked about waiving his no trade clause with the Twins and potentially, you know, being available on the trade market and moving teams. And he pretty much shut that down because he has a no trade clause and it's ultimately up to him. But he was like, I plan on being a Minnesota Twin for the rest of my career and wearing the Twins jersey as long as I'm playing baseball. So he said that he would not like to be traded from the Minnesota Twins, and it is something that's ultimately up to him. So if that's the case, A, if he doesn't want to be here, B, with the injury history, I'm probably staying away from the Byron Buxton business. And who knows if it's even tangible because of that trade deadline stuff that we just, our no trade clause stuff that we just talked about. So I still think that Griffin Jacks and Joan Duran are in play if we're talking about the Twins here. And those are two relievers that I really like. Duran would obviously cost you a lot. Jack's probably a little bit less. And those are two arms I still really like from the Twins. So would definitely still be talking to them, you know, before this trade deadline. And the Red Sox guys also might be off the table at this point. Again, 10-game win streak heading into the All-Star break. They really seem to be clicking on all cylinders since the Rafi Devers trade, frankly, which is a very interesting development. But yeah, those guys like Chapman, Jaron Duran, I think are probably off the table. And the Red Sox, I could see them potentially being buyers at the deadline and reinforcing their team a little bit more. So we'll potentially, you know, see where that Red Sox deadline goes. We'll say they are a little crowded in the outfield. So maybe if a guy like Willy Abreu becomes available, I think they're keeping Jaron Duran. But I do expect them to probably hold on to those guys at the deadline. The Guardians are the interesting team, though. I think the Guardians and the Phillies kind of match up perfectly here. Guardians don't love to pay guys. The Phillies have a lot of prospects in their system that I think the Guardians could be very interested in. The guys who I think that are probably going to be dealt at the deadline or are definitely available at the deadline for the Guardians, relief-wise, Class A, Cade Smith, who is having a pretty good year, ERA around 3, right-handed reliever who could definitely lock down some high-leverage situations for you, and Hunter Gaddis, who has had a couple of really good years there in Cleveland. Both of those guys are under control for a couple more years, which is clearly something that the Phillies are taking into consideration here. And if you're giving up big-time prospects, it's probably not going to be for a rental. So I think those are all those guys are interesting. Now, I'm not probably giving up Miller, certainly not Painter. Miller, we'll see about Crawford, but those two I just said. And I love Tyeet, and I love Arun Escobar down in single A. Those four guys I'm probably not giving up for Class A just because I think with Class A, he's not had the best year, and he's probably on the downtrend rather than the upswing. So I'm probably not going to give up some of my really, you know, young, high-leverage prospects that I would hope to keep and potentially trade for something even better. So unless I'm getting Steven Kwan, if I'm trading for Emmanuel Clase, I'm not giving up any of those four guys. And if Steven Kwan is in the package, and he would probably be the headline of the package for me in terms of an outfield bat, I would be okay potentially giving up some of those prospects for, because he is under control for a little bit more time as well, and he really does sort of check every box in terms of, you know, great glove, great at the plate, discipline, doesn't strike out a lot. He checks a lot of those boxes, so I would definitely be interested in the Steven Kwan business there for sure. But I think the Guardians are ultimately a team that the Phillies are definitely going to be talking to at the deadline. So we will see how that plays out there. I think that the Angels are another team that could be one of those, especially for an outfield bat. And I'm not even talking about Mike Trout here, even though that'll always be a discussion as long as he's playing baseball. But I think Taylor Ward and I think Joe Adell are two guys from the right-handed side that could be very interesting for the Phillies as well. And guys who could sort of lock down an everyday starting outfield position. And I think they're another team. The Phillies have obviously had history dealing with the Angels. And in the deadline in 2022, Dave Dombrowski got a couple of guys from there, and Marsh and Noah Syndergaard, that I think that could be another team that the Phillies could definitely be listening in on guys for. So before we get out of here, want to get to this weekend preview. Going to be nice to have the boys back down at the ballpark, and just excited to, you know, get the second half started, because the Phillies are in an interesting spot, and they're kind of playing for not only the NL East here as they're half a game up to start the second half, but they're going to be playing for a bye as well, because right now, if the playoffs started today, it would be the Dodgers and the Cubs who would be having byes, and the Phillies would be playing a wild card series. So they need to sort of bear down here and be able to clinch one of those top two seeds and get yourself in a spot to where you're starting in the division series, because no matter what people say, it is imperative that you get that bye. So weekend preview, Angels coming to town for 3. Angels hovering around 500, haven't been great this year. Typical, you know, Angels fashion. Don't have the best pitching staff in the world. They actually haven't announced their starters yet for this weekend series, which is pretty wild. So we'll see when that comes out. But for Friday night, it's going to be Jesus Luzardo for the Phils. Hopefully can get back to that early, you know, Jesus Luzardo start to where he was really pounding the strike zone. He's getting swings and misses with the breaking stuff. So hopefully we see that out of Luzardo. You've got Taijuan Walker, who's back in the rotation on Saturday night. Mick Abel looked great down in AAA. Hopefully he's back up soon if he's not traded. But we will see what Taijuan Walker has. And I think he's done everything they've sort of asked. So that's, you know, all you can ask out of Taijuan is just keep them in the game. And that's what he's done for the most part. And then on Sunday, they wrap it up with Ranger Suarez, who looks to build off of a phenomenal first half to where he was just a quality start machine, man, and just really locating well. And despite, you know, some velo droppage at some points, has just really commanded the strike zone and commanded all his pitches really well. So that's what your weekend preview for the Angel series. And that'll wrap it up for this edition of Phillies Today. Thank you, as always, for tuning in. We'll be back next week per usual. And for Phillies 24/7, this has been Justin Morgenstern. Have a good one, everyone. I'll see you.